Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to
what's up, the what's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, yeah, and what's going on? Welcome back from the Easter holiday. Long weekend. Any of you surprised by that nobody cared about the terrorist attack last week, that the market still managed to make their way higher? Were you surprised at Thursday when the markets were under pressure and they decided to rally? And I don't think anything should be a surprise here. You've got markets that are just not ready to go down. And one of the things we learn and we talk about often is when they're ready, they'll go down, and one of these reasons will be to go down. But right now, they have decided that they are not ready to go down yet, so there is no reason to believe that they're going to go down anytime soon, because that's what markets do. When they are ready to go, you can bet your ass that they will go. But right now, they're telling you that they're not really ready for a downward movement yet, and that's why we've been basically staying on the sideline and not becoming too active, because there's not much really to do right now. So instead of trying to find and guess what's going to happen, we sit back and watch. Now, you know, it's more of a mathematical theory now than anything else. You know, the Fed is BS. They're not going to do anything. It doesn't matter what they do. There is no rhyme or reason for when the market's going to go down. I mean, you can make all the cases in the world for bad earnings. You can make all the cases in the world for lack of growth. You name it, you can come up with a reason. But at the end, it will be when it's ready to come down, it will come down. You still have the major chase for yield. You continue to have people putting in money that have no desire to be there. But of course, when you have to chase money, that's what you're seeing. You're seeing a big chase for yield. And until that changes, that's what we have. So, you know, markets are relatively quiet, light volume, light volatility, but there is no time frame as to when they have to change their mind. So you can make all the cases you want. You can be a perma bear or a perma bull and say it's going to do this and do that. And at the end, all you're really doing is you're looking to get your ass kicked because you're wrong. Okay? Until the market gives a sign, which would be through the footprint that it leaves, okay, we're not going to see any major movement. You have this is almost like herding everybody into the Titanic, and it will sink, I guarantee it. But when is the question? So why try to be smarter than the market when the market's always right? So it's easier to wait and try to participate when it indeed does make the next move. And the next move could be up too. You know, there is no guarantee that we're going to go either one way or the other. I mean, every sign would point to lower, but it doesn't have to be. And this is something that you have to take away from markets, is when you have a market that is being manipulated, okay? And again, it's not only the manipulation factor. I don't want to make this only about the Fed. That's one of the issues. But what really is the issue is that if you decided that you wanted to put your money away, you have to figure out where you're going to put it. So if you look around the globe, where are you going to put it? Well, you have to put it in the U.S. equity market and take your chances. That's all. It's not complicated. It's not that it's automatic. Now, I believe personally that the risk for most that are in too high. I believe that your risk is too great to the downside from here. But that doesn't mean that it won't work. I think that you have to be very careful. What we always talk about, the greed factor. We know that markets jive on two different things, fear and greed. And right now, I think we can see the continued move of greed. In spite of everything you see around the globe that's bad, yet the markets push higher. So you can't say, well, the market's wrong. The market's 100% right because they're going up. So if you're short, then you're wrong. Okay. Now, you know, you've got an inflation model that is supposedly broken. You've got a data-dependent Fed that has a jobs number coming out this week. Now, you know, based on the stock market activity, you would think that they'd probably be looking to raise rates soon. Okay. Now, there's a lot of theory of what's going to happen. And if you go back and look at 1937, 38, after the Great Depression of 29, you know, we had a reenactment of that collapse. Now, is that where we are now? And there's no way to tell. Okay. We can look for anything we want. And again, this is the interesting thing about markets, is you can make them look and make people believe in anything you want. And that is not really the true sense of understanding how markets really function. And that's what I always like to concern myself with when I'm talking to you guys, is that really understand how the market works. Forget about everything else. Again, we know a couple things. We know the market's going to crash again. We know the market's going to rally. We know, you know, probably, and I don't know that this is the case. Let's say 10 years from today, the market will be 900 points higher or 1800 points higher. Okay. Why? Because the markets go up. Okay. And actually they should be, I'm sorry, I misquoted that. They should be probably 60% higher because they do go up year over year. Okay, so there's always buyers coming into the market. So you should not think that, you know, the buying is stopped. Markets go down when panic arises and when the sellers overwhelm the buyers, but there's still money flowing into the market. Remember, dividend reinvestment programs, pension funds, they're always buying. They're not playing the short side of the market. But at some point, the sellers will overwhelm them and there'll be less money going in, but there'll always be money going in. But I just think you have to just sit back and say, hey, you know, it's probably better if I observe the market versus trying to be active in the market. Because without volatility, there's nothing to be active for. And that's something that you have to also recognize and realize, is that when you don't have volatility, you don't have much to trade. It's great for investors, not great for traders. So that's another reason to sit on the side, idly by, waiting for an opportunity that says to you, yes, I can see the market starting to churn. I'm not using my opinion to see that, but I can actually see the market starting to turn lower. I can see the opportunities that are now potentially arising. And now I think that based on what I'm seeing, that I could now take a short position or a long position. But for now, why get too anxious? Why play a game when it's hard to win the game when there's nobody else playing? That's what you have to think about what we're looking at here. This is a mathematical probability model that really has no purpose to even be in at the moment, let alone try to be aggressive. So my advice is to sit back, relax, and wait for a better time. But there is no better time than to join my friends Scott Connor and Kevin Hinks over at Thinkorswim. You know, they do a lot of educating there. They you know, their platform, we love their platform. It's built by traders for traders. And I think you want to put yourself, you know, into some of their swim classes, their lessons, because they're helping you better understand markets. I also want to let you know that this Thursday, March the 31st, I'll be doing a special webinar for farmers on marketing plans and then they're getting you ready for the season. So if you need something, just email me and I'll send you out the link. But most important, the Bubba Show On Demand, libertytalk.fm. Join. We now have over 200,000 downloading. Yeah. Make yourself one of it. This is the Bubba Show. John Bubba Horwich, and we'll be back right after the Bubba Show.
Stay with me now.
Welcome
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for the one, the only, the very talented, and now a new social organizer for Citibank, Lila Max Media, yes. The Kaching Report, our friend Jane King. What's up, Jane?
Oh, not much. Just, you know, talking about LinkedIn, and you go to make one little minor change in your profile, and they send an alert to all of your contacts saying, hey, Jane has a new job. And it's like, no, I don't. And I'm getting all these, like, form emails, like, oh, congratulations on your new role.
Hey, so Jane, let's talk about that for a minute. Social media. Do you think it's a good thing? I know obviously you and I are both active on all sorts of social media. For business, for a person building a business, whatever, is social media a good thing? Do you like it?
I do, on balance. I mean, it's got its annoyances for sure. But I do think it's a good thing. For a couple reasons. First, for business. I think it's free. So a small business that doesn't have a lot of marketing money can promote themselves, and things get shared, and it's really pretty. I mean, it's exponential. Like, how many? If you have a really viral video, I mean, how many millions of people can see it over and over and over again for years? So, it's good in terms of just letting people know. Like, I'm not going to call everybody in my contact list and go, oh, by the way, I did this or did that, but if I add it to my profile, somebody can see it, and it keeps, the whole thing about marketing is just keeping people and things fresh in your mind and updated, and so it's not stagnant and you don't forget about it. A social media allows you to be able to do that. On a personal level, I think it's awesome. Like, I'm keeping in touch with people that I would have never kept in touch with normally. I mean, people I liked that I met 20 years ago that I might meet for a beer if I'm ever back in their hometown again or something. But now we can, like, see what each other's kids are doing when they have grandchildren and things like that. I think that's wonderful. And I do think that it has made the world a little bit smaller. So in balance, I do like social media.
All right, so now you mentioned something very important, and I always talk about you as the person that knows everything because of your back. Well, you've got a great background. I mean, you've got a Midwest background, and you're now on the East Coast. So you went from the farm to the epicenter of media. But you've got two kids. You've got young children, and I'm very concerned with our school systems and what's going on in that direction. And I want to know what your take is. From a mom and from a person in business and from a person who went from, the kind of schooling you came from to, the big city of New York. Now, I'm anti the Common Core, and that really disturbs me and bothers me. What are your thoughts?
Well, my kids are in New York State, so they do undergo Common Core. I guess, my son's in third grade, so he'll be doing his first testing coming up in April. So he's actually studying for it. And it's interesting because there's a lot of parents in the school system who don't want the test. They allow them to opt out. My feeling about education is, first of all, it needs to be improved. And it needs to be comprehensive. Like, I don't mind if he takes a test, if they measure him on where he needs to be in multiplication and reading comprehension and things like that. We just at dinner last night went over a paper that the teacher sent home with him about read each sentence twice, make sure you understand the context of it, check your work, kind of the simple things that you learn in life, and especially as you go through schooling that helps you with test taking. So, I just wouldn't want every child to be judged based on test scores, because I do think that, you have bad days and, things happen. So I would love to see the schools do more interactive things, not so much desk teacher teaching. I think people learn by doing. So I love, the school that they go to does a lot of tours. They do a lot of, they go in the neighborhood and they go see, like, they're studying chickens. My daughter's first grade is studying the evolution of a baby chick. And so they're going to go to Whole Foods and learn from, the poultry department. And that's what we do in New York. We can't go to a chicken farm.
Right.
So they do, it's a lot of experiences. They really engage parents and grandparents just come in and read and do projects. And I think that's all part of the educational experience. And then I also try to supplement their schooling with some tutoring, with some language. And just tours. We'll be going to Purdue later this week, and the kids have a book they've had since they were a baby about all these sites at Purdue. And so we're going to show them around, go show them the fountain and show them, you know, the sweet shop, you know, which is the little, you know, hot dog stand. And all these, I think all the experiential learning is really important.
Well, and that's what I think. So, yeah, you know, one of the things that bothers me about education is, you know, when I went to school, now I'm old, I get that, but, you know, you learned a lot of skills. And you had to deal with some things by yourself. Now, we had tests, too. We took, you know, we did some test taking, but you had to build some common sense and some logic. And I'm concerned that our youth today, especially with all the social media and all the technology, that we're getting away from the actual common sense approach to life. And you know, we call it, used to call it street smarts, where you know, mm-hmm. So I mean, you know, like, for example, I look at the Fed, and nothing against this, we're not gonna talk about the Fed today, but I look at them and I go, I mean, they're obviously very smart people, but they really don't have a clue in a common sense way, like how to get out of the problem that they created. And I'm worried that our children that we're bringing up now are not getting that skill or that gene that says, you know, I need to learn how to think on my feet. And, you know, I used to tell my kids all the time is, you know, I'm going to take and drop you off in the middle of nowhere, see if you can find your way home. And I mm-hmm. think that most people couldn't find their way home today. And I think that's a problem. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, I really try to, and of course, so much of this depends on the parents, and, you know, some parents just aren't into it, you know, I mean, what do you do about that? But, you know, I really try to make sure they get outside time, because I think just being outside and just roaming around just teaches you. I mean, you can, like, watch a little worm crawl across the ground or whatever, and, you know, and just learn about things. In nature, and you know, we get so many of our business and industrial ideas really come from nature. So, you know, I think that's important. And I think travel, I really try to take them around and teach them to travel. And I do, you know, they're 6 and 8, so they're still little. But when we go to the airport now, I'll say to them, okay, we're going to gate A17, you guys lead me there. And they'll find it. And so, you know, I just really try to incorporate those, like, practical things that you do in your life that, you know, maybe if you don't do a lot, you're not confident about, or it might scare you because it's a new situation. So I'm just trying to teach them to not be scared and just figure things out. I mean, we could figure it out, you know, and ask questions and take based on what you know and try to find a solution to this problem. So, you know, we do our best. That's all we can do.
No, I mean, that's all I want to do. You know, obviously, me personally, I'm past, you know, that my kids are in college and I'm done with all that and they're on their own. And, you know, and I just worry, you know, that I want to make sure that you know, they have a better life than I did. And I think that a lot of that has slipped by over time because we've gotten way too much technology. We've gotten way too much, you know, every kid at, you know, first, second, or third grade has got an iPhone already. And I love the technology angle that they're learning it because it's important in life. But overall, there is nothing like good people skills and being able to communicate face-to-face or you know, or on the telephone without texting or emailing. And those are some things that bother me. And I worry about that because, you know, I see it as, you know, business evolves, that it's getting away from the actual personal contact. I think that's a problem. What do you think?
Well, I think personal contact is so important. And, you know, I think, you know, I went to see all of the TV launch stations that I do live reports for, and some recorded ones too. And just going there and being there was like, I mean, I feel like it helped me in business. I mean, it gave me another few years with these stations, I think, just the trip there. So it's definitely key. My business partner was doing business in Montana, and, you know, he's in Los Angeles. And the guy that owns all these TV stations in Montana, he, you know, my business partner's like, well, we can just, you know, sign a contract over the phone, I'll fax you. He goes, no, that's not how we do business in Montana. You come up here, and we're going to go drink a beer, and we're going to go, you know, the shooting range, and that's what they did. And so, you know, it still is out there, and I think it can really make a difference in terms of business, that extra effort that people put into it. I mean, of course, there's times for video conferencing and texting and all that, but the personal stuff, the eye-to-eye contact, I don't think that will ever be totally replaced, and our kids need to know that that's part of the whole package as well.
And that's why when I come to New York, you and I sit down and look, we look face to face.
We have a cup of coffee. Yeah, I want to have a beer with you sometimes, hon.
Jane King, I always appreciate having you on. You always bring... You bring things, you and GE, you bring the good things to light. I appreciate you. Thank you so much, my dear.
Thanks, Bob.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We have been with Jane King, and we went over some education. And make sure that if you miss an episode and you want to hear more from Jane, libertytalk.fm, you get the downloads. We just passed 200,000 downloads a month, so I want to make sure that you get that. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back right after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Margie said Roy.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, you know, I got to get my guy, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. He's back. He always shows up. He never fails to show up. And we're getting a little bit closer to his targets. And I know some of the things he called were very good, and some are still trying. And, Matt, what's up, my man?
Not much. Just wanted to say hi and happy Easter.
Yeah, it was a great Easter yesterday. And, you know, Matt, you know, before we get into the actual technical working, which what you do, and that is your specialty, you know, I want to talk a little bit about last week and get your thoughts from just, you know, I mean, you watch the market, so you do know what's going on. It's not like you're just sitting there in a laboratory. I mean, were you surprised that there was really no reaction, in fact, almost a positive reaction to the terrorist attack last Tuesday?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I mean, you know, we had that initial, you know, futures were down, and then I think we ended up on that day. It's as if, you know, I mean, the world's a dangerous place. I guess people are just getting used to that and are just ignoring it like it's, you know, business as usual. But yeah, I was surprised.
Well, I have a theory. You know, first of all, I think that, you know, greed always wins out until it doesn't. And I think the market is just very greedy. And I think that because it wasn't on our land, you know, although it's very scary and bad, you know, just like Paris, they didn't react to Paris either. But I do think that that creates a bigger problem. And I was surprised. I'm from the school that, first of all, you and I are in agreement that the markets are very close. If they're not at the top, they're very close. And I believe that the markets are waiting for a trigger, and I thought that might be the trigger. I mean, it would have been a perfect week and a perfect storm to see a sell-off, because you go into a short week, a holiday week. I mean, I was surprised at the action on Friday that they kept buying them up late going into a holiday weekend. What did you make of all that?
Well, you know, you brought this up last time that this week is typically bullish going into Easter, but you know, and it played out that way. Though I think we're, you know, I've been saying this every time. I do think we're, you know, right near the top. I had a Dow target that was just 60 points higher than where we peaked on Monday, and we went a little bit higher still. But it's an inclining target, so we haven't quite completed that. It was close enough that we came within my margin of error, but I do think that, you know, we came close enough. Although the problem is it leaves open the door, since the target wasn't hit exactly, it leaves open the door that we make a new high, this week or next.
You mean a new recent high, correct?
Yeah, a new recent high.
Yeah, okay.
What I would say, though, about Europe is Europe really hasn't done much. Euro Stoxx 50 peaked on March 10th and hasn't exceeded that. Same thing with the CAC 40. The German DAX has made slightly higher highs since then, but along a pivot resistance line that I have, all of Europe is doing exactly what I would anticipate for the next, for respecting resistance and for the next fall to the downside.
Oh, and I would agree that I think that, again, I do believe we're very close to the tops, and if the tops aren't in, I do see that is the distinct possibility, and that there's going to be some selling, but it has really been a challenge to get people to continue to follow through, because again, when you look at Thursday of last week, they had a chance. I really had them on the run, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we had this massive rally at the end of the day into a holiday, and that I found that confusing. Just from a standpoint that why the hell would anybody want to go home long over the weekend knowing that these nuts are out there and that anything could happen at any moment, and yet they went home long. So, but of course that would tie into your targets and that little last bit of a spark rally to kind of get you into where you'd actually want to even probably get a better sale. What do you think?
I agree. It just gives an opportunity to add to shorts. I agree. But as far as the over the weekend risk, I mean, it's a, there's a very good chance for terrorism and that sort of thing. It's a big risk to take. Volatility is super low. Maybe it's just momentum. It's people that are short covering into the end of, most of the short covering, I think, has already taken place. But maybe, they got a chance, some of these shorts got a chance to cover, and they feel like, they have to before month end. I don't know.
Now, as I look at, things around the globe, and I understand. I mean, I understand how to read the charts. And now, when you're playing and you're looking at your footprint, through your setup, does the VIX come into play? Is that part of the footprint that you look at?
Definitely. I draw patterns on the VIX just like I do with everything else. We're at levels that are within the margin of error of where the VIX should bottom. I also follow, the Dow volatility, which is VXD, NASDAQ volatility, VXN. They're all in the margin of error of where they should be bottoming. So I do expect a rally in volatilities and thus, a sell-off in the market. It's taken a lot longer to get here, and more recently, which is, volatility sort of chopped sideways to lower. So it's been very slow to get where I wanted. But now I think they're positioned very well, for rallies. So they can begin any time.
And we'd like to see them begin sooner than later because we're both in the same crapper. But,
right.
But when you look at it, and there's a lot of comparison, and I don't know if this comes into your work. Again, I understand that you're a chartered market technician, which is obviously it takes a class, and it's a very high honor. There's not many of them out there, to be there. But does your work take into consideration? There's been a lot of talk about this as a comparison to 1937 and 1938, which would be almost the exact timing from the 29 collapse until the recollapse in 8 years later, just kind of like where we are now in this market. Does that stuff ever play in your mind or in your work?
I don't do cycle work like that, but I have friends who do, and I respect their work. I don't, get into exactly how it works, but, they've made a lot of very good calls and they've made that comparison. So it's a big concern. I don't think the depth of the, so I don't think the depth of what we're going to get is going to be the same, but you know, I do acknowledge the comparison. Yeah,
I mean, I think we're gonna have my personal opinion will be we will have, before this is all done, we'll have one of the deeper corrections ever. You know, again, I'm this is not from the CMT world. This is from the, we can't keep pretending that problems don't exist when we have no real business, we have no real jobs, there's no hope for jobs to come back. We've got a bunch of lying Federal Reserve people, we have a lying president, we've got nobody who pays any attention to anything, and they continue to talk about how good they're doing for us. In the meantime, they're ramrodding everything up our sweet ass here. You know, all in the name of, well, we're doing it for you. And of course, you know, my complaints of life has always been, you know, every time they talk about a debt ceiling or one of those problems, you know, that the Republicans and Democrats go in a room, and I think they're just figuring out how they're going to steal the money from the average schmuck on the street, and they're not really fighting. They're really sitting there saying, well, let's see, how are we going to split this up this time, Joe? And, you know what I'm saying? I have a big problem with that overall, and I know, again, that's not really part of your work, but I just wonder, do you ever give any of that stuff any thought as well?
Oh, I definitely do. See, what I think, here's what I think is going to happen on this move. I don't think this is the big one. I think that we're going to, you know, go to, you know, this is a very significant correction. I think we're going to actually run. I still believe that we're going to run to new highs, like, you know,
right,
all-time highs. And that will be a blow off top. I want to see a blow off top. I don't feel like we got it this time. And I think that will be, you know, that all these fundamental factors that come into play, I think we have one big fat round of QE coming. I think there's going to be, you know, mania, euphoria kind of setups. And then we're going to get, that's when I believe, you know, that we're going to get the collapse.
That's when they trap the final schmucks into the market, and they finally get the guys who, the final greed factor. And they run them in. Is that what you're thinking? Is that your thought process where you finally see that final grasp for greed? Because obviously, we're just so overloaded with greed right now, with the cheap margin money that people are just buying that have no business buying stock now. Anyways, don't you think?
I totally agree. And I think that, you know, most of these other central banks have already gone to negative rates. One might think that would be the end. I think that we're going to do something similar. I mean, we're already close, but I think we're going to just have one more shot at, you know, massive QE, maybe negative rates on the short end. I think inflation is going to run wild. And then I think when inflation is done, then I think we get the big collapse in all asset prices.
We are visiting with my man, Matt Demeter from Demeter Research. You know, it took me 12 weeks to get this right. But, you know, he brings it. He brings it every week. He brings his A game, and every week he tells you what he thinks, and he's pretty goddamn right. So you got to love his work. You got to check him out. Go to DemeterResearch.com. A lot of you already have subscribed to him, but obviously he does great work, and I certainly highly recommend him. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich. You ever miss an episode? LibertyTalk.fm will get you the on-demand version, which. Be one of the now over 200,000 people that are downloading the show every day. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich. We will step out for the break, and we'll be right back with more from Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich. Land of the pines, I'm thumbing my way in North Carolina. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. It is Matt Demeter time, and he's been with us, and of course, every week he brings his A game to the Bubba Show and gives you his outlay and what he's seeing, and his stuff is all purely by the numbers. He's not giving you his opinion. He's giving you what he sees based on what their charts are telling him. So, Matt, we did touch a little bit on the VIX in the beginning, and I know there's a few more things, and I'm sorry I cut you off. Let's go back to the VIX room and tell us what's going on with the commercial guys.
Yeah, no, that was really interesting. You know, when we had the big sell-off, started in May of last year, that was the peak. I know, you know, the commercials had gotten heavily long volatility futures, and it didn't really pay off for them until August. But they had, you know, continued to, you know, maintain a massive long position in volatility futures from May to August. And as you know, we had the the massive sell-off in August. They took those positions off. So I've been waiting for on this rally to see if they would go net long again in volatility. And they have this past COT report shows that the commercials, the big banks, have they were 2-to-1 net short, and now they're 2-to-1 net long volatility futures. And why I think that's key is that you typically don't buy volatility futures unless you think you're going to get volatility relatively soon, and that you're going to get sell-offs relatively soon, because these contracts, they decay over time. If you just sit with them, you lose money. So when you buy these futures, you want to be fairly strategic in your timing, because if you're not, you'll lose. So the overall point is they swung from a short position to a long position. Fairly, it was a very big change in 1 week.
That is a big change, and it does make sense, because again, volatility is just getting collapsing once again, and it's always a scary thing, and for traders it really sucks. I mean, forget about what direction the market's going in. Crushing volatility is the worst thing as a trader, because you just don't get the movement to get out. But I also noticed something, in the QQQ, which obviously represents the NASDAQ, and I want to get your thought here. You know, we made a high back in November at about 116, almost 116, and that tied into, over 5,000 in the NASDAQ. And basically since then, we've never even sniffed back to there, and we're down about 6-7% from those levels. And now it looks like we've made almost another high at about 107, 108 in the Qs. And that to me is fairly bearish, but it does look like, it really looks like a giant consolidation pattern with a breakout to the up, a false breakout to the upside. And now it looks like we're heading back down to the bottom, like back to 100 or lower. What are your thoughts? Do you follow that at all?
Yeah, no, I have patterns in NASDAQ 100 futures and QQQ, and they both, we've satisfied, from my charts, we've satisfied what we needed to in the S&P. We've satisfied what we needed to in NASDAQ 100. The only one that hasn't completed for me is Dow. So I think the NASDAQ's good to go to the downside. I agree.
Yeah, I mean,
I think we'll go below 100 for sure.
And I agree. I mean, I think, again, I look from a, and you're not a fundamental guy, neither am I, but from a fundamental standpoint, I think the world is in trouble. But now, you've been pretty spot on the grains and on the currency. I want to talk a little bit about the grains here. I know that we've had a little bit rougher time than you thought the last couple of days, because, beans have been rallying and corn has been rallying a little bit. And wheat, although rallying, has really kind of lost its mojo. But I think wheat is still, I mean, I agree with you that wheat is still at the bottom and needs to be bought on every dip. And I still believe that corn and soybeans here will probably pop in a new low pretty quick here, and then they'll probably be ready to turn around and reverse and go higher. But it has been a little bit more challenging. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, because we have a pair trade on where we're long wheat and short corn and soybeans, and that's gone against us the past 2 weeks. Wheat, it's on a very strong support. It's actually just above. It has a little more space to drop if it wants to. Corn and soybeans, if you just look at the daily indicators, they are now, much more overbought than wheat is. Wheat's still, more oversold, whereas corn and soybeans are a little bit more overbought. If you look at what the commercials are doing, they have drastically reduced their soybean long position. They're now actually net short. They're also short soybean meal and other soy products. But anyway, soy's had the biggest run, and they've actually just entirely, the banks have entirely dumped their long positions and are now net short. So in wheat and corn, they're still net long, and in wheat, they've actually added to their long position. So I think this is one of these things where if we wait, it'll move in our direction.
And I agree. I'm a big fan of the trade. And again, I always try to explain to everybody there's certain trades that you can treat a little bit differently. Wheat, the whole contract basically is worth $20,000. And I'm not telling you to take that kind of risk, but we both believe it's not going to zero. So you kind of hold this a little bit differently because you're not dependent on a CEO. You're not depending on earnings. It's pure a pure agricultural product that looks like it has made a bottom. And more likely than not, there's going to be a big move to the upside here at some point. And yet you don't have to get really that panicked about the downside because they're not going out of business unless we're going to quit eating. So I think that's always something to look at. And what's your viewpoint? What are you seeing in the currency space? You know, we've had obviously some pretty good runs, which you did nail yourself and, you know, had them called out. Now, what are you seeing now?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be more dollar rally coming and everything else should move to the downside. I'd be bearish, you know, basically everything against the dollar except for the British pound. Euro looks like it wants to retrace all the way back down to, say, 107. It's at 111, 112 right now. The dollar, I think, is actually going to make a new – the dollar index is going to make a new high sometime in the next few months, I think. And that high, I believe, will be a long-term high. I think it will be a very significant high.
Yeah, so you think that – now, what about the Canadian? Because obviously the Canadian was one of yours, and you pretty much played it like a fine fiddle. And it is so related to the oil. What is your look? I guess really it would be, you could tell me what you liked in the Canadian, I could guess your position on oil. You could tell me what you like in oil, I could guess your position in the Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, here's with oil, I'm bearish with, and so therefore in Canadian, I'm also bearish. Canadian, yeah, I'm bearish. What I'm thinking about doing, which I haven't talked about yet, is maybe going short the Canadian and going long the British pound. They both have some. There's some influence on oil in both cases because, you know, a Brent North Sea crude for the pound. But if you look at commercial positioning, for whatever reason, they are heavily long the pound, and they are net short the Canadian. So that might be a good pair trade to go short Canadian, long pound. Just to play it straight, I'm going to do, we're already short oil, and that's worked out. We got short near the top last week. Looking at the COT report in oil, the commercials, you know, really amped up their short positions. And if you look at, you know, inventories, that's pretty bearish, the situation with inventories. So it all makes sense to me.
Does the Brexit thing play in at all to this?
I think that's what's happening. I'm not sure if they feel if they exit that the. I'm not sure how that would affect the currency, but if in fact, it'd be something I asked you. I mean, if they exit, is that a positive for the currency? Is it a negative? Or if they stay, is that a positive or a negative?
I think the whole thing's a negative. I think it's telling you that the euro is a piece of crap, and this is not the first go round here. And it may be, you know, and the question is, can they fund their own currency? You know, these guys that keep printing, you've got to also have some back stock to be able to do that. That's why Greece had so much problem, because they didn't have anything. So, you know, but, you know, obviously Britain has a little bit more, but we'll watch it. We'll see how it plays out. We've got the vote coming up, but we got our guy, Matt Demeter, who, again, always brings the A-game to the Bubba Show, and, of course, we always appreciate it and love his work. And, you know, check him out at DemeterResearch.com. And, again, he does offer a special deal. Matt, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. It's good to be here.
This has been the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's always a great pleasure to come with you and visit with you and bring our experts to you. Make sure that if you ever miss an episode, libertytalk.fm will get you the download every day. We've got over 200,000 downloads per month now. We're looking to get more. And also, make sure you follow me on Twitter, at Bubba Average Joe. This has been the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I want to feel it sway.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.